Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Amplify Your Business. Today, I am talking to Karen Mason. She is a partner over at Summit Leadership Partners. This is a business that is helping develop leaders in mid-market size businesses. And so these are rather large businesses still, maybe a little bit larger than what our audience who tunes in regularly to this show are used to listening to experts on. But I think we're going to get a lot of learnings from Corinne here about her journey, but also some of the things that she's doing to help those organizations with their leadership development. So welcome to the show today, Corinne.
Thank you so much. I appreciate the opportunity.
So Corinne, before we get into what it is that you're doing over there with your business, I'm really curious if you could answer a question I love to ask everybody, and that is, from your opinion or from your perspective, being an entrepreneur now for about 10 years, what do you think every entrepreneur needs to know or understand?
So the first thing I would say in that space is that your style of leadership predicts your success. And what gets you through the first 3 to 5 years will not get you through the next 5 to 10.
Yep.
So as a leader, the more agile and learning oriented you can be, and the more diversity of opinion, thought, etc., that you surround yourself with, the more successful you will ultimately be. That would be number one. Number two, and I'm sure you'll align with me on this one, Lance, is you have got to understand marketing, communications, PR. You've got to know how to figure out what's the persona that you're after. How do you get into that market? How do you develop a brand? How do you have brand equity? How do you attach yourself to the right group of people for the things that you do, right? Whatever that is, whether it's a product or a service in our case. And so that was probably the hardest thing for us. You know, we were a group of HR professionals, human resource professionals, who started a company and had never been in commercial leadership. So this was big for us. And I'll tell you more about that later. And then the other thing that I would say is this, and I see this all the time. Founders and entrepreneurs by nature tend to be very creative people. And so they tend to have a lot of great ideas.
Yep. Visionaries, right?
Visionaries, right? And just what I call popcorn thinkers. They can like come up with a new idea every 5 seconds, and there's a new shiny object. You know, like there was a Disney
I know where you're going here.
Little dog where he goes squirrel, squirrel, squirrel. Like that is totally a lot of what founders and entrepreneurs will be like. And there is a lot of that that is super valuable in terms of coming up with an idea, really driving an idea, making sure you have a vision. But that kind of creativity can be too much when you're trying to grow an organization, because you have to stay steady on a direction. And the truth of the matter is you have to have a strategy that has a critical few, and by few, I mean 3 or 4 priorities.
Yeah.
And if you're constantly introducing new stuff into your system, especially a smaller organization, you will disrupt anything that could be productive, efficient, helpful as you try to scale and grow. So you really got to watch it.
I tell you, that's a truth bomb there for sure. And one that resonates with me, because I am that person for sure. That, I mean, I love tackling new challenges, and I love like playing around, tinkering with business and the structure, and then also the problems that we're tackling as well at times, because I see opportunities in everything, as opposed to where, you know, a lot of people will see challenges. I see just an opportunity to overcome that challenge. And so, yeah, I've definitely run afoul more than once.
And every entrepreneur I know has done it. Okay. We're supposed to be the experts, right? Even us. I think it's always important, if you can, to have someone in your organization who you value and you will listen to that is more of that operational mindset to help balance out the popcorn ideas. Because you got to have both. You got to have, there's helping, you know, tension in the, hey, let's go fix it, and the, hey, we need to build it. You know, you got to have a little bit of both of those things.
Yeah. Yeah, completely. Okay. I love where we're started here, and I can't wait to get more into some of the leadership things that you're working with your clients on as well, that I think might be very useful for our audience. But before we do that, tell me a little bit more about Summit then. Summit Leadership Partners. What is it that you guys are doing over there? What are you solving? You know, it's pretty, I think, self-explanatory in your name, but I'm sure you're doing more than just developing leaders. It's a little more nuanced.
It is a little bit more nuanced. So I'll tell you a little bit about us, and then at some point we'll talk about the story about how we got here, right? But what we know is that there are certain things that leaders at any level, including just leading yourself, certain things that you can develop and do that matter, both to the outcomes for you personally and the outcomes to your business.
Yeah.
And people in Fortune 500, which is a lot of where my career was spent, have access to all of that knowledge and training and development and structure.
Yeah.
People outside of that, your audience, our direct, you know, most of the people we work with, they don't. They don't have that structure, that ability. It's, you know, it's much harder to try to figure your way, your path through leadership if you're in a mid-market, which is our group. So mid-market, our customers are mid-market, high growth, mostly US-based, but not entirely. And when I say mid-market, I'm talking 500 million to 4 billion. So it's a big range of folks. It turns out the majority of the business we work through are privately backed. So we work through a channel of private equity. And we can talk a little bit more of that too. But it's this whole sense of like, how do we help leaders in these very high growth, high pressure environments to develop themselves so that they can match the scale and growth of their companies? And we work primarily at the top three layers of an organization. So we start C-suite, one level below, and sometimes we'll go a level below that. But most of the time we're working at that top two tiers, so C-suite and the folks underneath them. We also work at boards. So we work with boards to be more effective. We really work in three different ways. One is at the individual level, which is, think about that like individual development, executive coaching, assessment, diagnostics, things that help people like 360s to get a sense of where they are and what they need to go do for themselves. That's one. Two, and where I spend a ton of my time, is in team effectiveness. This is in helping leaders to charter their teams and align them around the strategic direction, and then helping them come up with sort of the rules of the road of how they get along as a team, because your team's alignment is actually incredibly predictive of success and can give you a huge competitive advantage. So you can't have just a bunch of Michael Jordans on your team. You actually have to have a team of people who can pass the ball and keep the ball and throw the ball. Like you have to have different players, right? So you have to have a bunch of aligned performers, and that's something that we can help do. And then the third thing is we look at organizations and their strategy specifically around human capital metrics, but think about things like org design, org diagnostic. Like, how is it from a human capital perspective that you're looking at your strategy, and where are some of the things that you might need to go after in order to really accelerate growth? So those are the three things that we do as a firm. And it's mostly centered around sort of how do we help leaders scale to ensure they can continue to grow in their companies and with their companies.
Yeah. And you had mentioned before we hit the record button that there's a distinctive challenge that the companies that you're working with, which are private equity backed, that the leaderships of those companies are faced with, that, you know, the Fortune 500 companies and potentially the companies who are smaller than that, or that don't have that kind of mechanism of finance, I guess, that they don't face the same kind of pressure. And I'd love for you to explain what you meant there so that our audience better understands the challenges that are unique there.
Yeah, it's so interesting because prior to doing this in the past 10 years, I'd really never dealt in the private equity space myself. I'd been mostly in Fortune 500, big corporate.
Yeah.
Big corporate, it's always quarter by quarter by quarter because it's public, right? But a growth rate of 5 to 7% is expected and pretty much exceptional, which is nice and not easy to do when you're huge, but it's something that you can kind of get into a cadence and a routine around. These folks in these mid-market companies that have taken private equity as a funding mechanism are expected to grow 20 to 30% year over year.
Yeah.
It's enormous.
Huge pressure.
Yeah. It's a huge pressure. And the investment cycles are generally 3 to 5 years.
Yeah.
So you get an investment partner and they are already on a clock the minute they invest in your organization. Like, you have got to hit the ground running. And then as a leader, if you think about it, you've got to now grow and scale your company 100% in 3 years is approximately the math. Okay. So, you know, you have an organization of 100. By the time you're done, you now have an organization of well over 200 or 300 or 400. I mean, your leadership really has to grow and stretch in a very short period of time with that kind of investor.
Yeah. Yeah. And the thing that I think also, which is a massive challenge that you must be dealing with all the time, helping a system with, is when you're talking about that level of growth, the onboarding of new people most likely into those organizations is quite significant. Or on the flip side of that, if you're growing with mostly the same complement, then it's about the performance culture that's required in order to achieve those internally as well. So strategically setting up the structure, the org structure, to be able to achieve those levels of growth, and then have that driven by that top down vision around, we have to embrace leadership at all levels throughout. So I would think that that's just a monumental task where there's just no room for real errors there, because at the end of the day, every business is a people business, really, right? And so if you're messing up the leadership part of it and not really implementing the proper training down through the organization, the organization has no hope of achieving that, really,
unless you're a purple cow. Yeah, yeah. You'll definitely crumble under the weight of your own growth.
Yeah.
If you're not careful. And you and I were talking prior to getting on here, but I think it's worth restating, you know, the beautiful thing about most entrepreneurs and founders is that they are idea people. They are visionaries. And you were talking about that Disney movie though, where like the little dog goes squirrel, 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 right? Like they also have what I call popcorn ideas. Like they cannot turn off the idea machine. Yeah. It's the beautiful thing about folks like that. You're probably a bit like that. I think I'm a little bit like that. My two founders, partners are very much like that. But as you grow, you have to have sort of a healthy tension. It's like breathing in and out, right? Like you have to have this healthy tension between all of these ideas and really managing what are the critical few priorities and what is the direction of the company. Because if you're constantly jerking your frontline folks around, and they don't really know which way you're going because there's always the idea or the flavor of the month or the day.
No.
It's really hard to get people aligned. And everybody's trying to do a good job and everybody will go try to do a good job, but they could all be doing a good job and pulling very different directions. And so yeah. You've got to have some kind of system structure, sustainability to help you get there. Most entrepreneurs and founders don't think that way themselves. They'll need someone else that they trust in the organization to help balance that for them.
Yeah. So like most of our audience who are listening today, they're going to be small to medium-sized businesses, which are definitely smaller than the type of businesses that you're in there working with. And so I'm just curious, are there any common themes that as you're working with those companies, the larger ones, with those leaders, that would apply to our audience that you can kind of carry over in terms of advice for them as they're thinking through their leadership, you know, puzzle and how they want to approach things within their business?
Yeah, absolutely. Like I keep teasing people that know me. Someday I'm going to write a book called Leadership is Leadership is Leadership, because it is. Leadership does change by context and it needs to. So yeah. There are nuances around it. But the core tenets of leadership do not change. There's a whole sense around the most predictive thing in leadership. There's two. One is, how interpersonally savvy are you?
Mm.
And the second is, how conscientious are you? So it's discipline and understanding how you land with others and how you're coming across to others. It's emotional intelligence and discipline in your process. Those are the two things that most predict success for leaders. And there are different flavors of that depending on context, but it always comes back to those two things. So when we talk to leaders and we talk about what is it that you need to think about, I would ask anybody, I mean, you could be a two-person company and I could still ask you the question, if you think about where you are right now, how are you landing with your customers? Are you clear on how you land when you communicate to your team? Are you disciplined about the communication? Are you disciplined about the metrics and the goals? Are you disciplined about how you're getting feedback into your organization? Those are the kinds of things that predict success or failure. It doesn't matter. You could be, you know, a $50,000 company or a $5 billion company. Those are still the things. It just gets bigger and bigger over time.
Yeah. Yeah, most definitely. And then I would think that like when it comes to the mistakes that people make as leaders. It doesn't matter if you're leading a team of one or a team of 5,000 people. If you don't nail down, like you said, these two things, the interpersonal part of it and the discipline and the systems, you're just going to set yourself up for failure, no matter how much support you potentially have around you, right? Because it does come from the top, right? It
comes from the top, and you have to be self-reflective and you have to be willing to take it in, continuously learn, continuously grow. The other thing that I see a lot of founder entrepreneurs in particular struggle with,
yeah,
is letting go.
Okay.
Delegating. Trusting that other people can execute on the vision. Because it's like their baby, right? Like, these are things that literally, yep, like, they come up from inside of them. Like, this is a big emotional deal for a lot of these sort of visionary people. And it's very hard for them to hand it over to someone else and say, go do. Because they also have a very specific thought process around how they think it should get done.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, completely. I know I fall into this, and I've talked to other entrepreneurs that are very much the same way, right? And that's where I really loved what you were saying before, in that your leadership style that served you for the first few years is not going to serve you later on, because your business is at a different stage, right? And so at the early parts of my business, I had to be much more hands-on. I had to be much more the driver of all that vision. And then now I have to be much more supportive and trusting, right, is the big thing there. So set the course.
And the hardest part a lot of times is to let someone else have a vision of how to execute it.
Yeah.
Because there are various ways to get to the same outcome, right?
Exactly.
And a lot of us have a hard time because we think our way is the best way. So that is something that, you know, I think I see a lot of people struggle with, and it's certainly something entrepreneurs and founders in particular struggle with.
So I'm curious now, because your business, I don't know what the size of your business is, but I'm guessing it's not the same size as the companies that you're advising.
Not yet.
So yeah, so you're probably much more aligned with your firsthand experience with entrepreneurship with a lot of our audience. And so I know, like, we're in the marketing business, and sometimes, you know, the shoemaker's kids don't have really great shoes. And so at times I look at our marketing and I go, like, what the heck are we doing? We have to apply a little bit more of what we know that we should be doing to what we actually do. Do you run into that as well, being, you know, a leadership expert, and your partners obviously are as well? So the three of you, are you making any mistakes there, or is it just smooth sailing because you guys have it dialed in?
All the time and every day.
Yeah.
I mean, I always tell people, I'm like, think about this. If you are, you know, like yourself, a marketing person, and you hire all of the top marketing people at the very top of their game with the most credentials you could possibly hire, and those are your team, think about where the bar is for you.
Yeah.
That's us, right? Like, all of the folks who work for us are leadership experts. So the bar on us as their leaders is incredibly high.
Yeah.
And it's really, really hard to meet those expectations, because we all are human and we're going to fail. And frankly, this is the first time the three of us, the three founder partners, have run a company at this level.
Yeah.
That's our company. And so, yeah, we learn every day. I would say the biggest things I feel like we've gotten, there are points in growth that we call pivotal points, and they hit each company a little bit differently, but they happen at about the same points in scale. So for us, we went from being under 20 million to right around 20 million right now. And we've added a significant amount of people as a result of that, because we're a professional services company, right?
Yep.
And adding people adds complexity. I know I don't have to say that, but I'm going to stop and say, like, think about that, because like, when say you have a team of 50, if you add another 50, you've now just changed your culture.
Yeah.
You've had to change your culture because you've got 50 new ideas, at least, on what the culture should be. And unless you've been extremely intentional about helping those people onboard and understand and be a part of and be directed and all of those things, especially with super high performers, high visionary people like the folks that we hire, you end up with a lot of folks with a lot of ideas and sort of this innate discontentment if it's not really well directed. So that's where we're at right now, is this sort of like pivotal point where we've hired a lot of really, really smart people. We didn't do a great job at onboarding, which, shame on us, we should have known better. But up until that point, literally, we'd been flying by the seat of our pants. Like, if we didn't know how to do it, we would make it up as we went because we were smart enough to have seen it somewhere else. You know what I mean? Like, we were making certain things that we didn't have a product and a training manual. We had what we knew, and then we could go like solve the problem. Now we have other people who also have to come in and do that. And that becomes a different thing. That's back to that systems discipline piece. And
yeah.
That's exactly what we are.
Yeah. I was going to say the systems are the thing that I've noticed as our company has been growing is just you can't understate how important the systems are and then evolving those systems as the company is growing, because it breaks at different thresholds of people within an organization. Yeah, it's incredible. Yeah.
It's incredible. And most folks who go out and start up companies don't start up companies because they want to build a bunch of systems and process.
Exactly. Even the leadership gurus.
Yeah. It wasn't because we wanted more process and bureaucracy. That was not the reason we started this, right? We do it because we want to solve ideas.
Yeah.
Or we want to solve problems with new ideas. And so, but you cannot overstate the need to have the systems and the infrastructure.
Yeah. Yeah. I really, truly believe that, you know, we've done, I don't know, 270 plus episodes now where I've talked to entrepreneurs and that's one of the things that keeps coming up over and over and over from an operational standpoint as to the companies who have been really diligent in adjusting their systems, implementing, adjusting, and keeping focused on systematizing their business. Those are the ones that seem to scale at the greatest rate, probably the easiest as well. Not that scaling is ever easy, but
it helps.
Yeah.
Because if you have to go back and redo it at some other time, like if you haven't had it and you have to go build it, it's so painful.
Yeah.
It's so painful. And I will tell you, investors know this too. So if you're ever trying to grow your business to a point where you're going to try to attract money into your company, which all of us at some point would like that, right? Then they look for it. Did you build it? Is it scalable? Is it something that where's your data? How easy is it to get to? Can you follow your goals? Can you track your outcomes? You know, do you know all of your customers? Do you know where they are? Do you know how to get in touch with them? Like, these are key things, right? So,
Yeah, exactly. Like me personally, I would never invest in a company that hasn't got their systems dialed in, knowing just how incredibly important it is, right? And yet I still have a lot of improvement in our company on the system side, right? So it's a really interesting thing where I know it, I say it, but here I am owning this company and I don't have it. So what the hell, Lance?
And you know what the other predictive thing is about good leaders, Lance, is that they're self-reflective. So there you go. You're going to be okay. You know, I think that's right. And all of us have to figure out how much money we have to invest in those things versus how much we want to invest in the other things. All of that's part of the natural tension in the business.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's necessarily the fun part.
That's right. Yeah.
It's not as fun as the ideas.
So a question for you, just because, you know, it's on my mind oftentimes when I look at some of these massive companies and just some of the decisions that their leaders make where it's a head scratcher. So I want to ask you, and I didn't warn you that this is going to happen. So you can choose to skip this question if you want to, but Elon Musk and his leadership style. I mean, you can't deny that guy's so friggin' successful and he's such a brilliant individual, but I can't understand the leadership style that he's trying to, you know, employ in his organizations, especially X, or formerly Twitter.
So he's Tony Stark. Are you familiar with Marvel Comics and the Marvel movies? Sure. He's Tony Stark.
Yeah.
The attraction about him is that he thinks of things in a way that no one else does, and he's right. So there's something very like attractive about like, geez, how is this guy thinking of these things? Like, you know, he made an electric car scalable and like now in Austin, they're everywhere, right? Like SpaceX, which is also here in Texas. So he's now made Austin and Texas, which is where I am, his home, which is fascinating to watch too. I mean, they're literally starting to tunnel in Austin because we're going to have cars underneath the ground based on his boring company. Okay. Yeah. The guy is just like, there are no limits to how he thinks, which is his brilliance. It's also his downfall. What's happened with his companies, if you really pay attention, is that they contain him in the creative element. So they create a space for him to continue to create. And typically what happens is he starts another company because he goes on to something new. And then they set up an infrastructure up behind him that's doing all of the day-to-day tactical infrastructure, true leadership stuff.
Yep.
And they kind of don't invite him to the party a whole lot.
which I think works for most of the company, except for X, formerly Twitter, right?
Because it's a channel of communication. So he can say whatever he wants to say, which is, I mean, and prior to that, I mean, he was on like Joe Rogan episodes and things where he was smoking weed and saying whatever he wanted to say. And his board was like going through the ceiling, right? Like this guy is just, he is in the realm of leadership. He's definitely like a fascinating character to watch, but he's not the typical. And I think in any other context, other than him being super, super brilliant, he would be a complete fail.
Yeah.
Because you cannot treat people the way he treats people and expect to be a good leader.
So the genius earns him some passes in a lot of ways, right? Yeah.
Yeah. The genius. And it's interesting because I watched this with other founders too. Like what tends to happen is the genius is what creates the ideas, back to sort of our popcorn ideas. It's what creates the ideas, but it's the execution that wins the money. Mm. So it's finding somehow to do that balance.
Yeah. Well, and he attracts some incredibly intelligent people as well, obviously. And so he's able to tap into that. So the execution is generally there and he pushes them hard, right? Pushes them real hard.
Well, they're probably people who are already predisposed to work hard. Frankly, yeah. I mean, we deal with C-suite teams all the time, right? Nobody really sits in that C-suite spot without already being pretty self-imposed around high performance.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, lots of motivations for that, but they're pretty intrinsically motivated. It's not about the title and the seat as much as it is like what they do, what they like to do. And that's probably true for the people around him too. Because if you needed him to tell you that you were doing a good job, you'd be in big trouble.
Yeah, I would imagine. Okay, so let's get on to your entrepreneurial journey. So you've mentioned that you were formerly in, you know, the corporate America world, working for big Fortune 500 companies. And so there's a lot of stability there. There's a lot of security in that. And here you are jumping ship 10 years ago to start to develop your own business. And so I'm curious, what motivates somebody to do that, to step away from all that security and what you had going on?
Yeah, it's an interesting story. I won't go into too much detail because I could go on for hours around it. But you know, I talk about high performers partially because I'm right there with everybody. Like I can't pull myself out of that too. I mean, I got a PhD. I, you know, was really trying to work my way up the corporate ladder. I was fairly successful at that, led HR, led talent, executive development, all these things in these Fortune 500 companies. What I realized, and something that I have a specific passion around, is women in leadership, women in top leadership in particular, because there's still a lot of challenge for that. Yep. And there was challenges that I personally began to feel, especially the closer I got to the top of those big organizations. Lots of times where I felt like my voice was being shut down, my opinion was not respected, I really wasn't able to influence outcomes the way that I wanted to. And it became frustrating.
I bet.
To have to fight that on top of all of the other things that I was trying to accomplish, right? So it became a real frustration point for me. And I was like, how do I do something with all of these things that I know that might help bring more equity to this, might help bring some positive, you know, development to it over time for others as well as myself. And I kind of knew there had been this little voice in the back of my head for a long time that had kind of said, you know, the best way to do that is probably to be out in your own business. Hmm. Because a way you influence outcomes a lot of times is to be in charge, right? To at least be on the top level. And so a friend and a partner, Dan, started this company a decade ago. He invited the first two of us, Todd and myself, to be his founder partners with him. This will probably ring a bell for some of you out there, though, that have started your own businesses. I mean, I had just walked out of a corporate role. I had also just walked out of a battle with breast cancer that I had just won. And I had all of these opportunities to go to these other organizations for big, big money. And Dan calls and he says, I think this is the time to get, you know, a small group of us together to really do this. We're only going to get paid if we make a sale.
Yeah.
And oh, by the way, I'm not sure if we can get benefits or not. Okay, keep in mind, I'm just out of a breast cancer battle. Okay. And wow. I'm in my late 40s at this point. And I mean, there was a point, Lance, where literally I was on the bathroom floor, like in tears, because I so much wanted to go do this, but I was also scared to death.
I bet
you all make the challenge, you know, go make the move. Looking back on it, I wish I had done it earlier. Like, it's been the best thing. Not because it doesn't have challenges, but because I've learned so much, I've grown so much, I've influenced so much, I've been able to really express with authenticity a lot of the things that I think I bring to the table. And I think I've made positive impact in others, both in our organization and with our clients. So for all of those reasons, I'm glad I did it. But it was scary as heck at that initial stage.
Yeah. So the desire then to make an impact and with this whole equity issue that you were seeing and that so many women experience, I can see how doing what you're doing now, you get to impact so many businesses then. With that, as opposed to if you're just working within just the one that you are working within, right? And so I think that must have been a big, big draw. But what were some of the other things that had you kind of take that extra leap? Because, you know, that aside, there's so many other things when we think about entrepreneurship and doing it, you know, not on your own, you had partners, but still just the three of you. That is really, really intimidating. Did you grow up in an entrepreneurial family? Mm-hmm. Did you have some experience with that at all? Or did it come from someplace else?
Yeah, it's such a great question. So the short answer is not really. I grew up with a single parent mom who was an executive administrator. Nobody in my family prior to me had ever gotten a college education, much less an advanced degree. I tend to take things the extra mile, therefore the PhD. Yeah. So I'm like, hey, if I'm going to go, I'm going to go all the way.
Yeah.
But, you know, I did have my dad, who was somewhat involved with me growing up, did have a variety of businesses that he ran. He was also a pilot for big airlines. And so there was a little bit of that. I think actually had I had more entrepreneurs in my atmosphere earlier in my life, I probably would have done this earlier. Because I would have understood like how to do this and how to get the money and how to build it and how to market it and all of those things. Fortunately, my two partners are incredibly deep financial and business folks. Dan and Todd are just incredible around this. And so I felt like I had a bit of a safety net with the two of them because I knew they knew. Plus, I had learned all these things through corporate America. One of the things about me that's probably true of a lot of you out there in our audience is I like to solve problems.
Yeah.
I like to solve problems and I like to solve problems where I actually see something happen. And
yeah.
In corporate America, sometimes you solve problems, but it'll take a year for something to actually come out of it.
Yeah.
In the environment we're in now, I can help solve a problem today that will actually show up as a resolution tomorrow.
Yeah. That's wonderful, right? When you have that kind of
that's a big impact, right? Yeah. It's immediate. And so the other thing that I realized was I ran a corporate university, which if you're not familiar, if you haven't been a Fortune sort of 500, big companies put together leadership learning institutions inside their companies. They call them learning universities, okay? Leadership universities. So I ran one of these for a large Fortune 500 company. And it occurred to me that leaders who are in smaller entrepreneurial endeavors, and we'll say smaller anywhere from a one-person shop all the way up to that $5 billion mark, don't tend to have leadership university. They don't have infrastructure and development and coaches and things that help them learn how to be better leaders. And yet I think excellent leadership impacts our businesses. It impacts our clients. It impacts our communities. How we lead I mean, my God, I will not go into politics, but all you have to do is look at, you know, any place where leadership is in question and you can see what kind of chaos it can bring, right? And so leadership matters. Leadership matters in how we lead ourselves, how we lead our families, how we lead our communities, and how we lead our businesses. And what I realized is that we could take a lot of these things that we knew how to do and that were funded in these larger organizations and apply it in these smaller places too.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. Now, I would imagine with the business that you have and the scaling that you guys have been doing, that your business has changed a lot. You've probably ran into a few challenges along the way. And I know you hinted a little bit at the beginning where, you know, one of the key things that every entrepreneur needs to know is around the marketing and the strategy around that. But what else? Is there anything else that you've bumped into as you grew your business that you go, geez, I wish I would have known that sooner so that that didn't slow down our growth?
Well, let me come to the marketing because I don't think I fully covered that. And then I'll answer that question because I do think marketing is huge. So in our case, you're taking three human resource folks, you're throwing them into a new business model in basically a new vertical. Like, we had not really sold in mid-market, not really been in mid-market. We're not commercial leaders. We had no idea how to create a brand or like identify our market. Like, that's the stuff I wish we had understood way earlier. Cause frankly, for the first 3 years, it was what I would call guerrilla marketing. It was like, whoever we knew is who we were calling.
Yeah.
And we were fortunate in the sense that we had big enough networks between the three of us that sustained us and helped us grow for the first 3 years. But we didn't have even an inkling of a brand really until year four or five. And it's only been now, as we're close to year 10, that people literally that we don't know will pick up a phone and call us about something that we do. I mean, it's taking us 10 years to get there. So that's huge. What's another one? We talked a little bit about systems. We talked a little bit about strategic direction. I do think it's very hard to put a strategy in place and stick with it long enough to really help your people align behind that. But that's super important. And it's actually more important to have a strategy that's 80% correct that you have everybody aligned behind than it is to have a 100% correct strategy with only half of your people aligned behind it. So. Yeah. Giving people direction is significant and huge. And as you grow, the way you communicate that direction, you have to rethink about it all the time. So even us, you know, it used to be that we were all, even though we're all kind of remotely located in different parts of the world, we saw each other enough, we came together enough, we communicated enough that we didn't have to have any kind of formalized message process for how we were talking about our strategic direction, what we wanted to do as a business.
Yep.
About 2 years ago, we grew to the point where we were like, not everybody understands what we're doing. Yeah. Right? Why is that? Oh, well, because maybe we need to have a cadence around communicating this, because now we have people reporting to people reporting to people. And it's like, now we have to have more formalization in that. So I do think it's important to stop and really think about, like, are the messages and the ways that you were communicating as a team, as a group prior to still working for you as you continue to grow? And then, the final point that I'll make, and I'm sorry, I know I'm giving you way too many here, but this is another one of my favorites, is
I like it.
It turns out that top teams and their performance as teams is incredibly predictive of performance. In fact, it can create an element of sort of strategic advantage for you. So if you haven't spent time really getting your team at the top well-chartered, well-connected, understanding how to debate, understanding how to hear each other's voices, understanding how to be aligned, that's an important thing to do as well.
Yeah. And that's makes a lot of sense to me, right? Because when you think about that, if your team doesn't have those tools to be able to understand, like you said, the communication part of it, but also how to deal with conflict and how each person that's part of that team, the way that they think and approach problems and challenges and the way that they like to lead or be led as well. If you don't understand those people aspects of it, you're never going to get to a place where there's enough harmony really for the excellence to occur, right?
That's so true. It's all about trust.
Yeah.
It's about understanding each other. Yeah. And it's so interesting to me because even in small businesses, you can have a ton of people drama.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, no doubt. It only takes two.
It only takes two.
Yeah. I'm curious as well. So we talked about like some of the challenges as you're scaling, but what's easier now at this size, at the scale that you're at today, that, you know, wasn't easy before? Is there anything that kind of comes to mind?
Well, like I said, the branding marketing approaching the market's gotten easier because we've just hit so many brick walls along the way. We've learned now what our path forward is, and we're pretty good at that and investing in that. I would say the other thing that's gotten easier is for us to invite other people in. So for a long time, the three of us were sort of the founder partners, and we started to hire other folks kind of at that senior level in the organization, but it was harder to assimilate them into the conversation for a while at the same level as the three of us were having a conversation. And you and I talked about this a little bit too. It's hard to delegate. It's hard to let go. It's hard to like say, here's the vision. Now I trust you to go do this. But it's important, and you have to, or else you won't be able to scale. And so we've gotten much better, I think, at bringing people into the top as well as into sort of our front line as an organization. And that's gotten easier.
Awesome. Well, thanks a lot for sharing all of your experience and wisdom here and you know, the background that you have in leadership. We dug into that quite a bit in terms of some of the advice, and I know our audience is going to really appreciate that. Now, if somebody wanted to connect with you for whatever reason, is there a direction you want us to send them?
Yeah, I would say go to the Summit Leadership website. It's www.summitleadership.com. You can always reach out to me on LinkedIn as well. I'm pretty easy to find, Corinne Mason, PhD. But either way, love to chat with people. And yeah, appreciate the opportunity. It's been a fun conversation.
Awesome. Well, thanks again. And for everybody who's listening today, if you enjoyed this episode, you want to check out some of our archived episodes, head over to amplifyyourbusiness.ca. That's where you're going to find all those. And of course, subscribe on your favorite podcasting platform to get our next episode. Until next time, everybody have a prosperous day.